Tonight, inshallah, this will be the third lecture in this series, Al-Andalus, the Forgotten History. And we spoke last time about the introduction of Islam into Al-Andalus and how Musa ibn Nusayr, rahimahullah, and Tariq ibn Ziyad, rahimahullah, and Muslims were able to conquer Al-Andalus, that part of the world, peninsula, and was known today as Spain and Portugal, in a period of 4 years, between 92 Hijri to 96, the Muslims were able to take over the whole peninsula, except that Sahara, that area, that we said will have a big role in the future of Al-Andalus. That era, those 4 years, we gave it a name. We call it Ahd al-Fath. Okay? The era of conquer. The era of conquer. Now the next part of history of Islam in Al-Andalus will be called Ahd al-Wula. Ahd al-Wula. Al-Wula, governors. Plural of Wali, that is governors. And those, or this period called Al-Asr or Ahd al-Wula, because these governors will be assigned by the Khalifa. Okay? By the Khalifa. Al-Khalifa al-Umawi. Alright? So whoever we're going to talk about today very much until the end will be governors assigned, given delegation to be in charge of Al-Andalus by the Khalifa of Al-Islam of Al-Khilafa Al-Umawiyya in Dimashq. This era will extend from 96 Hijri to 138 Hijri. Okay? So as you see, it's extends until the end of the Khilafah al-Umawiyyah and 6 years or 7 years into the Khilafah al-Abbasi. Okay? Into the Abbasi dynasty. So about 42 years, this period will be Ahd al-Wula. 42 years. Khulafa, as we said last time, Al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik called over Tariq ibn Ziyad and Musa ibn Nusayr while they were trying to conquer Sahara, And Sahara, where is my stick, man? Do you have a stick in the back there? Or in the front? You got a map for nothing? We need to stick. Alright. These iPhones don't have laser thing, pointer? قال تمخض الجبل فولد فأرة هسا يجيبوا لنا ستيك كده bring a real stick not like 2 inches stick it's not a problem toothpick daily toothpick. It's okay, it's all right, sorry. Don't worry about it. It's all right. We said that when Musa ibn Nusayr and Tariq ibn Ziyad, rahimahullah, hala. Wara. Allah yahdik. Allah. Harra fiik khalas. All right. We said Musa ibn Nusayr and Tariq ibn Ziyad, rahimahullah, were right here, the Sahra or the Lay, they were around there trying to conquer that area. That area is very strong with fortresses and castles and all that. That's in around 96 Hijri, and that's when they were called by Khalifa al-Umawi in Dimashq, Walid bin Abdul Malik, because he was afraid Because within 4 years, this whole region got conquered by Islam. And then set this area. So they wanted to continue, but he was afraid that the Christians will gather together behind him and defeat him. So he ordered them to stop the conquer, and as we said, Musa ibn Nusayr was planning his mission to go through Europe to conquer Constantinople, that far there. He wanted to go through whole Europe to conquer, and we said he was how old? 75 years old. Musa ibn Nusayr, rahimahullah, was 75 years old when he conquered Spain with Tariq ibn Ziyad. So Abdul Malik ibn Marwan calls them over. Broom? You broke the broom? لا بد من صنع الرجال ومثله صنع السلاح. أنت جايب لي بروم؟ الله يهديك. Alright. So when they called over in 96, a few days later, Abdul Malik bin Marwan died, and his brother took over Sulaiman. Walid bin Abdul Malik died, and his brother took over Sulaiman bin Abdul Malik. And his opinion was to keep them as were. He didn't want them to go back. He thought it wouldn't be safe. And as we know, Sulaiman went for Hajj. And Musa ibn Nusayr went out with him, and he died in the city of the Prophet. And from that point, Tariq ibn Ziyad disappeared. Any little we know about him, and they say he died a few years, 6 years later, from 96. So now, Sulaiman bin Abdul Malik, then after him, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, Khalifa al-Umawi, then after that, Yazid bin Abdul Malik, then Hisham bin Abdul Malik. Those are the Al-Khulafa that consecutively come after Abdul Malik, Walid bin Abdul Malik. Awwal Wali, the first governor, was placed in Al-Andalus, was Abdul Aziz ibn Musa ibn Nusayr. The first governor that was given the power by Sulaiman bin Abdul Malik was Abdul Aziz bin Musa ibn Nusayr, who's the son of Musa ibn Nusayr. Okay? And we said Abdul Aziz was his father sent him to conquer the west part of Al-Andalus. So he conquered Portugal or Lisbon, Lisbon. Okay? So he was in charge of, or the first governor over Al-Andalus. Ahd al-Wula, the era of the governors, we can divide it into two periods. Okay, into two periods. Within this period, the first period, or within the 42 years, we will have 22 governors. Replacing each other. 22. And we will see why that happened. But the first period, okay, كانت كلها جهاد. The first era. So now we have this era, الولاة, the governors, and we said we're going to divide it into two periods. The first part of this was all jihad. Yeah, and in other words, they know. MashaAllah. Good. When you raise them in the masjid. So what happened? They did not stop. MashaAllah, MashaAllah. Allah, that's good news. Alhamdulillah. That's good news. Very inspiring. So the first era, they knew that they could not stop. So you have, now you are here, separate from the rest of the Muslim world, separate from any support. And you got yourself in here, and then the rest of Europe against you. So if we stop, we're powerful. If we stop, eventually they're going to come and get us, okay? There is the Pope, there is the Christians, there is Europe, and they're going to come and get revenge. And there is the Sahara, they will keep pointing to the Sahara until we get to know what it's all about. So al-Fatra al-Ula, all of it was jihad. That's why we have 22 governors in this 42 years. In those 42 years, 22 governors, many shuhada. The governors were getting martyred. Huh? They will go and fight and get martyred and killed. Some of those, I will mention some of those ula, some of those great governors in this first period. Okay? Some people that we should know about. One with the name of Samh ibn Malik al-Khawalani. هذا اسم very important name. Samh ibn Malik al-Khawalani. You will see in this period how went from one extreme to the other extreme. The governor. Huh? One of them, Samh ibn Malik al-Khawalani. وهذا عمر بن عبد العزيز put him the governor. He was the governor in the time of Umar bin Abdul Aziz. We know Umar bin Abdul Aziz was the Khalifa from 99 Hijri until 102. Less than 3 years. Okay? He was the Khalifa for 2 years and 6 months, Umar bin Abdul Aziz. And if you look in his seerah, and if you look what he did, يعني to the point where he's described as the fifth Khalifa. Khalifa, Khulafa al-Rashidin. You know, Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, and Ali. From his greatness and his justice and how he was able to, Allah Azza wa Jal, put the acceptance in his hand, they consider him the fifth Khalifa. And he's the grandchild of Umar bin Khattab, the mother said. So, the first thing he did, now this is Islam. So, Samh went to France. Okay? First thing he started the jihad in France. He went all the way until he conquered a few states in France and he established a state. That state, in the southeast of France on the Mediterranean, Bahr al-Mutawassit. And he called it Septimania. Okay? The capital, Arbona. So in this area, this whole thing and more, a little more, this became ruled by Sharia. Part of France. Okay? So in this area, this is the Mediterranean. In this whole area, that become Septimania, known as a state, okay? A country by itself. And the capital, as we said, Arbona. Arbona on the ocean, or on the sea. This area known more, people familiar more with it as well. Yes. The French Riviera. So Muslims today go to the French Riviera to rule by Sharia, to talk about Islam, to make da'wah. No. Muslims go there to throw their money. Masajid? Fasad, corruption, of course. But this is a big area. And you want some of the cities in there, Cannes, Monaco, Marsilia, Nice, Toulon, all these in that area. Okay? So that was ruled by Sharia for many, many years. That part, the French Riviera. Samh ibn Malik, rahimahullah, stushed 102 Hijri. Okay? So he didn't rule for long. He was martyred in one of the battles in year 102. He was put there, maybe 99 or 100. So he very much ruled for a couple of years. But he reached with Islam that far. Okay? After Samh comes another man with the name of Anbasa ibn Zuhayn al-Kalbi. Anbasa followed the footsteps of Samh. And he continued his expansion and conquering the land to bring the people, the deen of Allah. To bring the people, the deen of Allah, Azza wa Jal. He ruled from 103 to 107. 4 years. Some people think you have to rule for 30, 40, 50 years to change. 4 years. 103 to 107. He continued conquering in France until he reached a city called Sens. Sens. Who lived in France? You know where Sens? Make sense? He reached a place called Sens. This city is 30 kilometers away from Paris. 30 kilometers. That's less than about 20 miles from France. In his time, Muslims conquered 70% of France. 70% of France ruled by Sharia. 70%. In the time of Anbasi. He got martyred in 107. Alright? At that moment, things started changing. Things started changing. After Anbasi, some governors took over. One of them, Al-Haytham Al-Kalbi. وهذا الهيثم الكلبي ها كان متعصب لقومه. Okay, he was racist. Okay, to his own people, to his tribe and his own people. So he started creating problems between the Arabs and the Amazigh or the Berber. Okay, so because he's Arab and he's fanatic for his own people, started creating problems between the indigenous people. And the Arabs. So that started creating issues in the Al-Andalus, to the point where some battles took place between the Arabs on one side, the Muslim Arabs, and the Muslim world. And we're talking just less than 10 years. 10 years from the conquer of Al-Andalus. Okay, talk about from 96 when they finished, and now we're 107. 10 years, and now Muslims getting divided. Every time the Muslims shift for a moment away from the deen of Allah, that's what happens. And the enemies of Islam know that very well and capitalize on that, as we will see. So, then after that, Alhamdulillah, this period didn't last long. Allah Azza wa Jal sent someone. This Tariq al-Andalus is like emergency room. Someone comes with a heart attack, is not breathing, no pulse, whatever, and CPR, he's back. So every time you think that we're done, Allah Azza wa Jal sent someone to revive. When you feel that there is no hope, Allah Azza wa Jal sent someone for a miracle to bring back the power to the Muslims. So when it reaches the point where Muslims now fighting each other because of their ethnicity, Allah Azza wa Jal sent someone with the name of Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi. Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi. This is very great name. One of the things he did, he got rid of this racism. He fought it so hard. He educated the people. He started spreading the teaching of Islam amongst the people. He encouraged the people back, revived the sunnah of al-jihad. The sunnah of al-jihad in Al-Andalus, he revived it back when people got busy fighting each other. Think that when you're busy fighting each other, you forget about other obligations. So Ahd al-Wula, we have two periods, as I said. One, the first period, is conquering and bringing Islam and spreading Islam. And this went for 27 years. From 96 until 127. Even though in between there was some corruption, but overall this period was prosperous. The second part, which was a period of weakness and plots and revolutions, corruption, and that lasted for 15 years. Lasted for 15 years. So now we're talking about the period of the first 27 years. عبد الرحمن الغافقين, in this first period especially, had special things that happening during this time. First, that you conquered Al-Andalus in 4 years. So now the focus on teaching the people Islam. Folks, you're talking about people, Christians. You're talking about people with no religion. Huh? You're talking about people who are ignorant. So 4 years we conquered him, now we're going to spread Islam. We're going to teach people Islam. And this is a way that works anyway. We will see that it worked everywhere. It doesn't matter who the people are. This religion is the religion of the truth. If it's being presented right, it will attract people. Well, also you have to remember, at those times, there wasn't this war of propaganda on Islam. But at the same time, even though there is a war of propaganda on Islam, well, we have a counter war. The way they have access to technology, we have access to technology. Maybe we don't have as much power as they do, but we can make a difference. We can change. And yeah, the brothers tested me about those billboards, why Islam, and today I saw one actually, and Muhammad, what's common between Muhammad and Jesus and Ibrahim alayhi salam, ala sunnah salam. Well, these are a great thing. Even though I'm personal, in my personal opinion, I don't get very excited about these stuff, but it's a great thing. Everyone is doing what he believed to be good. For me, my idea is this. We have an offer for many, many more billboards with zero fees. We don't have to pay. Zero. Those billboards cost a lot of money. With zero. Every Muslim can be a billboard. That's what I believe. Every Muslim needs to live, if each one of us would live as a Muslim and abide by Islam, we will be a free billboard. Symbolically, yeah. That's what will attract people to come forward and ask. A lot of us, we're Muslims. No one knows we are. Okay? Even those amongst us who look Muslims, he's walking with a frown in his face. And as they say, يا أرض أبصرشو ما حدا أدك أبصرشو. You know, no one talks to me. People get scared. People already scared. So we have to be pleasant. So each one of us in his workplace, in the street, in his school, in his job, in his university, amongst his friends, can be inviting to the Deen of Allah without talking. Okay? So very important to understand this fact. So they started teaching people Islam. They started. Now Muslims have the power. They could come to the people of Al-Andalus and say, this is the deen. As we will see how the Spanish people, and from the Spain, when they conquered the Muslims, the Christians, how they gave the ultimatum to the Muslims at the end of the history of Al-Andalus. Muslims could have gone to those people, Christians in Al-Andalus, and people of no religion, and told them, this is the deal. You leave, or you become Muslim. You leave, or you become Muslims. Actually, the third option, you get killed, as the Christians did with Muslims at the end. They told him, you either leave, you become Christian, or we kill you. And actually those who, a lot left, to North Africa, a lot got killed. Those who became Christians continued to be oppressed, even with the name. They were given different name. The name of Moors. Yeah, second class Christians. And you're Christians, but you're not pure blood Christian. Even though maybe those people, their ancestors were Christians who lived. So the Muslim, with Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi, rahimahullah, started educating people about Islam. Okay? Started spreading Islam in the peninsula. something they've never heard of. Huh? A way of life addresses all issues in life. We said, we talked about the conditions previous in the first lecture, the conditions of Europe before Islam. Hmm? What they were, they did not even know about shower. They thought, job and the dirt on their bodies was a blessing and health. They were showering once or twice a year. So Islam now coming with all these new stuff, they were never exposed to. And one of the main reasons they were never exposed to, because that was the manhaj and the methodology of the church. If you keep people ignorant, you keep controlling them. That's why in that era, in Europe, any scientist come out, they kill him. They'll burn him, in public squares, they'll kill him. Because it was threatening to the church. So all these things, as we will see, was supported by the church, by the Pope. Okay? So, within a small or a short period of time, Al-Andalus, Spain and Portugal, completely converted to Islam. Complete. No one was forced to become Muslim. But when Islam was introduced, completely converted to Islam. That's why in Europe, or in the West in general, here or there, they tell you, make that. Make that. But I know my dad one. And that not a reason for me to stop or to discourage any of you. But my da'wah, I know when I write an article, and there is a million articles against my da'wah. Huh? When I give a speech and there's 10,000 or 100,000 speeches against me, it's not going to be as effective. Okay? That's why you might say, why then we can't convert this country or today? Completely that. Al-Mawazin, مش متكافي. There's no balance in power. Okay? That we discussed this issue about those who come and say, well, these countries now open, huh? The doors of da'wah and teaching about, talking about Islam, and no starch, no one starch. Well, still, the powers, it's not balanced for my da'wah to be as effective, for me to be able to reach people. So, within a short period, Al-Andalus turned into Islam. And the people of Al-Andalus, the indigenous people, became the main soldiers of the armies of Islam. Plus the Barbar who came from North Africa and the Arabs who came all the way from the East. There is a new generation produced now. وهذا اسمه جيل المولدين. Okay? جيل المولدين يعني the breed, new breed. Now you have a new breed of people. Where the father, Barbar or Arab, the mother, Andalusi. The mother from Al-Andalus. So now you got a new generation where they are connected with the East and with the West. Okay? And that, subhanAllah, that create power. Look, the mentality of Muslims, some Muslim countries today. The foreigner, the Muslim foreigner who's not from that country, come to that country. Okay? There is no way he will ever be able to become a citizen. Okay? Fine. We understand your argument. Who are you going to give everyone citizenship? Then foreigners will outnumber the indigenous. In some of those small, mamalik, as they call it. Then you have the person, the Muslim, marrying someone from the people of this country. She carries the citizenship of that country. He will never be granted that citizenship. The children will never be granted the citizenship. Right? Actually, in some countries, the only time the children will become citizen if the father dies or get divorced. Yani, in other words, those children who are born there, so their mother belongs to that land, could get deported anymore. Could have no country anymore. Okay? The other thing, I understand you might have a point of why you don't give citizenship to everyone. Well, you don't have to give it to everyone. But when you see someone genius, when you see someone with big brain, when you see someone who you can benefit your country and your people, shouldn't you encourage to recruit him? Before, what happened to those minds and to those brains? They ended up going to those. Actually, they might be given citizenship before even they put a foot, step a foot in those countries. And look at the Muslims. Oh, well, you think Muslims aren't smart? They imagine we collect the scientists, the Muslim scientists in the world. They will make a country by themselves. We went to colleges and we went to universities and we saw who are the excellent students and the number one students and the faculties and professors. There is no department in any university in America, and I say this, might be exaggerating, but I don't think I will be far away without finding Muslim professors in there. No department. You find them faculties, you find them deans, you find them this and that. Muslims, this ummah, doesn't lack minds and brains, but it lacks being given the opportunity. There is a Muslim country, just last year, I was reading the article, this professor in Harvard said he received this email. He thought it was a spam. But then one of his colleagues told him that he received the same email. And he applied and he got. What is the whole thing? This Muslim country built a university. It wants to make it a very excellent, advanced university. So one of the ways you attract people and you get reputation, if your faculties have reputation. People, faculties from big universities in the world, if they're part of your university, that gives a big push to yours. So what they did, they were inviting those professors, to become faculties. Doesn't have to work in the university. Just to put his name that he's affiliated with such university. He might need to spend 1 week in there, a year. And the salary is about $90,000. Okay? $90,000. Just spend a week vacation, but be on your resume. Put your affiliate, so they can put on their website and in their information, their booklets, so-and-so from such and such university, faculty with us. Okay? Allah understand. More maybe, there's a big chance that this same professor was taught at one point of his life by a Muslim. And another story happened with someone I know personally. We went to school, to dental school, and he was ahead of me. He was in his special periodontist, treating gum problems, implants, all these things. So he went back, he finished, and he went back to his country. No need to mention names. So he said he started his own practice, and he was an excellent doctor. Excellent. Better than any non-Muslim in that school. So I'm talking to him, he said, Amira, princess, one of the daughters of whatever, they call them kings or whatever, came to his clinic. Her tooth broke. Okay? To be saved, needs a small surgery. This surgery, literally, and I'm not a specialist, it doesn't take me more than 5 minutes. And I can do it even if I'm drunk. Okay? Too much tea. So the point, and it's very simple procedure. But it's called surgery. Because there is cutting and there's blood. So when he told her that, she said, and he's from that country, she said, I will never let you do surgery on me. She flew to New York. She did the surgery. I went back. ماشي، هذه عقدة الخواجة حبيبي. And I tell you, very few you will find as good as me. وهذا from their own. So imagine if you're a funeral doctor, imagine me going there to work and she walks in. هو ما شاء الله يعني his beard is bigger than mine. بس هو from البلد. Actually, looks like he got so offended or something. It got into his head. So a few months later, he calls me. He says, listen, I'm opening a big center, like his partner with some doctors, and they're going to open like a small hospital. So they want doctors, dentists, and specialists. I said, okay. And he's asking me if I know anyone. I said, send me the information. I might be interested. He said, no. We want them blonde. Allah. We want them blind. But I'll dye my hair. You know? That's sad. Sad. That's where the Muslims are. That's where the Muslims are. And we think, what will change that is having a new boss, a new president. خبث. Do. Insan. That leader is one. Yes, he has influence. There's a lot of khabath within the people, amongst the people. That needs to be cleaned. Needs to be cleaned. Okay? So the people, our heroes in the past, understood that very well. They understood that very well. So they focused on the people. They focused teaching the people the right things, the right deen. Okay? So they were successful to turn the whole Andalus into Islam. Okay? And those, the new breed, now they belong to that land and they belong to Islam. So there is no feeling that we're foreigners anymore. So they're gonna fight and they're gonna strive and they're gonna sacrifice for their own deen and their own people. They started getting rid of racism. Of this caste system where you're Arab and you're Berber and you're Andalusi and you're, they got rid of all that. They started buying these churches. Very expensive, very too much money, very high prices. And turn it into masajid. They never came to a church and they said, get out. They were buying them. And anyway, if you got a lot of people converting, then these churches don't have as much customers. As much clients, as many clients. So they had to shut down. This is what's happening even, continue to happen today. They focused on architecture. They focused on building, masajid. They focused on building, bridges. Qanatir, kabari. Not kabariya. Bridges. All these castles, fortresses, they put too much money into that. And that's how you're right. You don't focus, Islam, we want Islam, we want the state, Muslim state, and all we worried about, teaching people only Quran and Sunnah, and we sit in the masajid praying all day. Islam is a balanced religion. That is the foundation, and that foundation encourage you to advance in everything. You cannot become independent as long as you need to import your food from your enemy. You cannot become a power as long as you need to import your weapons from your enemy. Very important. They built factories for weapons. They built factories for ships. All that forces, very important. The Spanish people, the indigenous people, who did not convert, started imitating the Muslims. You read the Jews and the Christians were bragging that they're teaching Arabic in their churches and synagogues. So those who did not convert to Islam, and this is the lead that no one was forced. But those who continued to stay on their religion were bragging that they're offering Arabic classes in their churches and synagogues. And that's what happens. Usually the defeated nations imitate the powerful ones. Huh? Powerful ones. Look what they imitated the Muslims with. Amalio. We imitate them, huh? With clothes, with haircuts, huh? With slang, with pants dropping to the knees. That's how we imitate. Allah musta'an. Qurtuba, because it was close, huh? You know. Qurtuba, because it was close to the North Africa. Muslims are here. They made it the capital. Okay? Made it the capital and the center of Islam. After that, the jihad continued in France. So all that, in the time of Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiq. Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi continued his jihad in Spain, in France. In France. They went so deep. And they conquered many states. Huh? They conquered Arles, Bordeaux, Toulouse, in Arabic Talusha, Tours, and they reached the Poitiers. Okay? Poitiers is 170 miles from Paris. 1,000 kilometers, 700 miles from Cordoba. Okay? So that's how far they reached. Now, conquering through, they were overloaded with the ghanam, with the booties of war. Overloaded with the dunya. Even there was an opinion circulating amongst the army that we should go all the way back to Qurtuba, to drop off all these ghanam, and go back. They're 70 miles from Paris. Usually, a country collapses if the capital drops. Okay? But Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi, rahimahullah, was with the opinion that we came for the sake of Allah. We came to bring people out of the darkness to the light. All these things we can get rid of. Shouldn't delay us. But Allah Azza wa Jal has his own plan. In this region, Tours, it's not in the picture, but it's a little bit more north, the Poitiers, this is also called Tours. There was a palace, an old palace, Qasr. Qasr is Mubalat. Okay? There was an old palace. So in that region, the French armies come. And a battle takes place between the Muslims and the French in that region. So, Balad huwa Qasr in the Al-Andalus. Al-Jaysh al-Islami, the Muslims were 50,000. 50,000, the army of Muslims was 50,000. The Muslim armies never reached that number before. 50,000. It's a huge number. Okay? But again, one of the issues, the money, the dunya. Second issue, the division of those, the distribution of those booties of war. Even though in our Sharia, we have rules how to distribute. But starting the fitna, that's when the dunya comes, starting the fitna amongst the soldiers, again, based on race. Oh, we're the indigenous, you're foreigners, you shouldn't get as much as I get. This thing, so it created division in the hearts. So the hearts attached to the dunya, and now the hearts are divided amongst each other. One of the problems, they admired their number. As I said, they never reached this big number, 50,000. So they admired how many they were. And this reminds us of Hunayn. The Muslims were huge in number on the day of Hunayn. But they got in the first, in the beginning of the battle, when they admired their number and they said, لَا نُهْزَمُ الْيَوْمَ مِنْ قِلَّةِ, that we will not be defeated today because of our number. They were defeated in the beginning of the battle. وَيَوْمَ حُنَيْنٍ إِذَا أَعْجَبَتْكُمْ كَثَرَتْكُمْ فَلَمْ تُغْنِ عَنْكُمْ وَضَاقَتْ عَلَيْكُمْ الْأَرْضُ مَرْحَبًا. But it was the will of Allah that they were able to pick up themselves. So, Charles Martel, the French leader, comes with his armies, his French armies, to tour this area, tour or Balat, Shada, Poitiers. And يعني the Arabs call him Char Qarle. Char Qarle. Who was Charles Martel? Martel the Matro, the hammer, And the Pope called him that. The Pope of France. Because he was, like hammer on the enemies. So he comes with his armies, 400,000. 400,000 soldiers. So you got 8 times your number. But again, Muslims, never care about the numbers. And we said in, when they came into Al-Andalus, how many there were? 100,000. Okay, 100,000. Against 100,000. 12,000. Okay, against 100,000. Numbers were never promised. 300 with the Sahaba, with the Prophet, against 1,000. Now, numbers don't matter. Actually, you look in our history, as I said before, whenever we overnumbered the enemies, or we were huge in number, very rare Muslims overnumbered the enemies. But when we were huge in numbers, we get defeated. Because خلاص, the reliance moves, shifts from being on Allah completely, now on the numbers. And وَحْنَا أُمَّا, we cannot be victorious with our numbers. We're 1.5 billion. How much are we worth in the world? Seriously. إِحْنَا we're ummah created for the deen. I don't care whoever wants to say otherwise. This is the reality. And to bring me any era in our history where we were good, not excellent, good, and we were away from the deen. So he came with 400,000 soldiers. And a war or a battle took place for 10 days. Battle took place for 10 days. In the beginning, the Muslims were victorious. In the beginning of the battle. And that was, as I said, 70 kilometers, 70 miles away from Paris. The Muslims were victorious in the beginning. Then the French army realized what? They realized that all these things they collected from previous wars, the Muslims, the booties of wars, the Ghanaim. So they said, let's attack them. Forget about the army. Let's attack their Ghanaim. And that's how the whole thing flipped upside down. So now he's fighting for what? For the dunya. He wants to protect his ghanam. And again, without fighting for Allah, you lose. You're fighting to brag, you're fighting for monetarily benefits, you're fighting to gain reputation. Well, you will lose. The only time you win, when you fight for Allah. So that turned all the mawazin, all the weight and the victory goes from the side of the Muslims to the side of the French. Okay, and this is the battle in the year 114 Hijri. Okay, how many years after the conquer? After 92? 22 years. 22 years, from the moment Muslims entered Spain, they reached Paris. Okay? This battle, known in Islamic history, Balat Shuhada, the battle of Plati, or the battle of Tours. Okay, because of the location it took place. Summiyat Balad al-Shuhada. Balad, we said the palace. Balad, palace in language of Al-Andalus. And Shuhada, as you know. So Balad al-Shuhada, the palace of martyrs, because the huge number of Muslims who were killed. Huge number of Christians as well, but huge number of Muslims. يقول المؤرخون النصارى, the Christian historians, لو هزم الفرنسيون في معركة بواتي لفتحت أوروبا جميعا ولدرس القرآن في جامعات أكسفورد وغيره. The Christian historians say, if the French were defeated in the Battle of Poitiers, whole Europe would have been conquered by Muslims. And the Quran would have been taught in Oxford and other universities. Because French is the shield for the rest of Europe. What's left? Well, after France, what's left? Okay, small countries. Italy. Okay, we will see the Muslims reach Italy. Okay? They reach North Italy. And they rule that area by Sharia. Okay. The Muslims, and actually, the Christian historians mentioned that as يعني, Europe was lucky. But actually, it was disaster in Europe that they stopped Islam from coming in. That's disaster. For them, in our measurements. Anyway, now the Muslim army, the norm is when an army gets defeated, the victorious army run after them. The French didn't do that. Okay, the French, they were satisfied with the victory and with what they got. So they did not go after what's left of the Muslim armies. يقول الله تعالى, يا أيها الناس إن وعد الله حق فلا تغرنكم الحياة الدنيا ولا يغرنكم بالله الغر. Allah has laws. Allah says, O you who believe, O people, the promise of Allah is true. So do not be deceived by the dunya. Do not be deceived by the dunya. ويقول النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم, فوالله ما الفقر أخشى عليه. It's not poverty that I'm worried. I'm not worried that you're poor. He tells the Sahaba. ولكن أخشى أن تبسط عليكم الدنيا كما بسطت على الذين من قبلكم فتنافسوها كما تنافسوها فتهلككم كما هلك. It's not poverty I'm worried about. I'm worried that you become rich. I'm worried the dunya will open it in front of you. You get the treasures of the dunya. Then you start competing for the dunya the way those before you competed over it. Then it will destroy you the way it destroyed them. The way it destroyed. Soon. Law. From the laws of Allah that do not change and do not side anyone. Not because they're Muslims, the law is going to change. La. Those are fixed laws. Do not change. And the Prophet ﷺ says, دَعُوهَا فَإِنَّهَا مُنْتِنَ. Throw it away. Leave it away. Leave it out. It stinks. And that is, he's referring to, Asabiyya, Ansuriyya. And then you're better than me, I'm better than you because you're not from this country and you're not from this region and from this language and this ethnicity. It's discrimination. The Prophet has said, leave it. It stinks. ويقول الله عز وجل, إن أكرمكم عند الله أتقاكم. The best of you amongst and the side of Allah, the most with taqwa. So these ayat refer to the reasons of defeat. The dunya, division, the hearts are divided. And to admire your own numbers, to rely on your own numbers and not on Allah Azza Wajal. It's been hundreds of years. Now 114, we're in 1400 Hijri plus, you're talking about 1300 years later. And the enemies of Islam understand that very well. We forgot about that. But our enemies don't forget. They still capitalize on these issues with Muslims. Because they know standing against Muslims, with weapons, you cannot get anything out of it. They know that. And the example, that I mentioned before, Algeria. Algeria was occupied by France, from 1830 until 1960. 62? 62. 132 years. They understood well, we cannot defeat these people. These people are Muslims, holding weapons against them. They don't care. Their children will go in front of our tanks. They understand that about Muslims. They understood that we are people that Akhirah, we love the Akhirah the way they love the dunya. So the only way we can get into them is by studying the history and see how they were defeated. So they understood one of the main reasons of defeat, you can defeat the Muslims, is divide them. Divide them. So what they did? They divided the Muslim world to countries, as you know. But that is not enough for them. Because they know one of those countries could defeat. So they have to play the same game internally. So they have to divide the Muslims from inside by creating that feeling of superiority, caste system. So how are they going to do that in North Africa, especially Algeria? Let's divide the Arabs and the Amazigh. The Arabs and the Amazigh. How are we going to play it? We're going to instill in the minds of the Amazigh that those Arabs are occupiers. They came and they took their land from them. Okay? So they start cherishing these feelings. Of course, we're not saying all the Amazigh fell for the trick, but many did. Okay? As well as you find the same thing, and they're using the Arabs in different regions. But we're talking about this specific region because it's connected with the Al-Andalus. So they started infiltrating the Amazighi communities, Al-Barb. And remind them, even to the point where they convince them, they come from European ancestors. They come from European ancestors. Those Arabs, coming to take over. So they start playing that game. Another thing they played, teaching, creating this, the Barbariya or the language, Al-Amazighiyya, it's, هذه لغة منطوق, is a spoken language, it's not written. So they started writing it, teaching it as written, using Latin alphabet, English letters. So now they connect them more to them, separate them. They found the Arabic language and Islam educations in the Amazigh areas. They start introducing the French language. That's why a lot of people, they mastered the French language in those Muslim countries. They don't know how to speak Arabic. Okay? They started teaching in 1967. They established the first academy to teach the Amazighi language. In 1998, they established the International Academy of Barber. Okay? شوف the contradiction. In 1999, a minister came to the President of France, Jacques Chirac. He came to him. Name, I think, Justin. He came to Jacques Chirac and he suggested, he's a minister, he suggested of introducing new languages into France. Yeah, and he You know, if French is the first language, then we can introduce second language, third language, like this country. You know, English first language, and then Spanish. فقال شراك. Shirak himself said. Of course, he refused, but he said, إنك تريد بهذا المشروع بلقنة فرنسا. He tells him, you want to turn France with your suggestion into like the Balkans, the countries, you know, these regions, Bulgaria and Bosnia and Croatia, how it's divided, they're all same race, but it's divided, Turkey and all that. So he tells him, do you want to divide France? So what's haram on France? Halal in Algeria. Same mentality, because they know. You divide the people, France supports with money. And look now what's happening in Mali. How those who took over, the Islamists, they destroyed tombs. Tombs of people they claim Awliya, or in Tunis. Actually, it's Tunisia. They burned places where people go to the graves and worship the graves and all that. Who is funding the rebuilding of those tombs? Adol Khubab. Who's funding the rebuilding of those graves? France. So that should give you immediately a hint. There is no good in these things. Because there is no way. And they will do the same thing in man. Keep people worshipping these graves while he's drunk. He will never wake up. Okay? So anything against Islam, they're gonna church and they're gonna support. So very important to pay attention to that. Okay. So when the Muslims left Balat al-Shuhada, left the Battle of Poitiers, and they ran back to Al-Andalus, Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi, rahimahullah, got marked. Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi. Uqba ibn al-Hajjaj al-Saluli took over. And this man was the governor from 116 to 123 Hijri. And he was the last Mujahid and the last person who really, the last governor who was or who continued the movement of spreading Islam and fighting the enemies of Islam in this era. He was given the choice by the Khalifa. He was given the choice by the Khalifa to become the governor of North Africa, all of it, or Al-Andalus. And he chose Al-Andalus. And the reason he chose Al-Andalus, he said, because it's neighboring the Kuffar. It's neighboring the Kuffar. So the chance, fighting is always there. That's history. He carried over seven expeditions to France in 7 years. On his own, by himself, on his own. They will conquer and he will go down and talk to the people. On his hand, over 2,000 people became Muslim. On his hand, just by talking to them. Talking to them about Islam. That's what they were concerned about. The things he was able to conquer and add to the Muslim land was Duvinay, Saint Paul, province of Burgundy. These are in France. And there's a region called Piedmont. That's in North Italy. تتوان سلازم تعرف إيطاليا, right? صواريخ بتروحون. So he reached. He was able to conquer North Italy. There's a big region of the shoes. Italy looks like a big boot shoe. On the top right there where the foot goes in, that land, that piece was conquered and became ruled by the Sharia. He, rahimahullah, was martyred in year 123 again, and by his death, the first period of Ahd al-Wula, the era of governors, ended. Remember we said the bright period and the dark period. So by his death, the bright period ended. Then we come to the dark period of the second era. Okay? And that's when I said a lot of plots, a lot of revolutions, a lot of corruption, and we will see why. And all that was the consequence of the Battle of Poitiers. Because what happens? They came back defeated. Now, the division of the hearts, the discrimination, the reliance on oneself, the love of the dunya, caused or led to the division amongst the people in Al-Andalus. So they became too much divisions within Al-Andalus. Okay, within Al-Andalus. So within Al-Andalus now, we got regions ruled by different people. Okay, so those Arabs, region, just like look today in the West, this is Arab Masjid, this is Turkish Masjid, there's Bengali Masjid, there's Paki Masjid, Guyanese, Trini Masjid, that's what happened. So Al-Andalus became like that. So one region, Arabs, don't interact with the Barbar. Within the Arabs, same issue. This guy Mudari, this guy Yemeni, seriously, this guy Hijazi, this guy Shami. So Yemen, Yemeniyin, they have their own areas. Mudariyin, Fihriyin, Umayyin, each group has its own areas, and they are as now creating the animosity between those and those. Bani Qais, Bani Sa'ida, all that led to the establishment, or the showing, the rising of tyrants to rule them. The rising of tyrants to rule them. One of those, the first one, was Abd al-Malik ibn Qatan al-Fihri. Abd al-Malik ibn Qatan al-Fihri. This guy was a tyrant. Was a tyrant. So when you talk about someone come after, Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi al-Hajjaj, Uqba ibn al-Hajjaj, This guy is tyrant, oppression. He spread discrimination. Because he was Fihri. Okay? So what happens? He, whenever they fight, the booties of war will not be given to the Barbar. He will not given to other than Fihriyin that he belongs to. What's that gonna create? In the hearts of people. Then after him came Yusuf ibn Abd al-Rahman al-Fihri. And this man became the leader from 130 until 138, which is the end of this dark period. Okay? But look, one of the things he did, he separated Al-Andalus from Al-Khilaf. Remember, Al-Andalus was part of Al-Khilaf Al-Umawiyya. In year 132, Al-Khilaf Al-Umawiyya collapsed, and Al-Abbasiyya took over on the blood. By shedding blood. So he separated. He said, Al-Andalus is independent of Al-Khilaf. Al-Abbasi. So now it's completely on its own. Wahada by itself is a disaster. That's one of the things he did. He dealt with over 30 revolutions in his time. 30 revolutions because of his tyranny. So, as we said, this is between 130 and 138. Again, it's 36 years. Only 36 years from the time of conquering Al-Andalus. Only 36 years. Now, we're talking about 800 years. Only 36 years. The result, of course, with all these things, with all this fitan, forget about Al-Jihad. We have Al-Jihad. Now, we're fighting each other now. There is no pushing enemies and scaring the enemies in France and in Europe. We're in Sahara. Forget about that. We're busy with each other. So what happened? The results. The Muslims lost all the conquered land in France, except Septimania, the French Riviera. Okay? They lost everything else, except that small region. Maybe, looking at the map, it's about maybe 15 to 20% of France, after having 70%. We have a new kingdom in this region. Was established. Remember Sahra? This was never conquered. we have a new Christian kingdom now called the Mamlakat Lyon. Okay? Yeah, I see a Lyon here. But it started small here. Okay? Because this was all Islam. So the kingdom of Lyon. Of course, the separation by Yusuf bin Abd al-Rahman Fihri from the Khilafah al-Abbasiyyah. Al-Andalus, as I said, started getting divided into region based on race and ethnicity. Zuhur Fikr al-Khawarij. Okay? Khawarij is a deviant group that arose within Islam. They were the ones who killed Uthman bin Affan radiallahu anhu. One of their mentalities is if you're Muslim and you commit a sin, you're kafir. Khalas, you will go to hell and there is no tawbah for you. That's one of their mentalities. So when you have such mentality and such madhab and such mentality within the Muslim community, what happens? Bloodshedding right hand. There is no hesitation to kill Muslims. Huh? There's no hesitation to kill Muslims. They killed Uthman. Uthman bin Affan, radiallahu anhu, Nurayn, they killed him. Okay? What's their excuse? Huh? They're kuffar. They don't rule by the Sharia. They're corrupted. We need to kill them. They're this. These people agree with the ruler who's kafir, so they're kuffar like him. Yeah, making takfir is so easy for them. Okay? So this madhab, showed up in Andalus and in North Africa. It was imported from Sham, from the East. Came from the East, and a lot of the Berber joined. Why they joined? Because they were oppressed by Al-Fihri, by the one of the tribe of the Arabs, Al-Fihriyun. They oppressed Al-Berber and the rest of the Arabs. So a lot of the Berber joined Al-Khawarij. So fitan, started rising. At that point, Islam went so low in Andalus, the Muslims are divided, fighting each other, groups divided here and there, separated from Khilaf al-Abbasiyyah, to the point where, if you study history, you think that's it. Islam will end here in Andalus. 138 Hijri, only 44 years, or 46 years after Tariq bin Ziyad put his foot in Al-Andalus. The Muslims reach of how big we reach and how low we reach in small periods, less than 50 years. So when you see Palestine been occupied for 50, 60 years, and you say, there is no way, or you have no patience, or this 50, 60 years, nothing. That's not to say we accept it, but we don't lose hope. Still continue to work. We just need to work. We need to show Allah Azza wa Jal that we're making an effort. Not just lectures and speeches and talking and nonsense and negotiating and tables and peace and Oslo, all that. That's not the preparation Allah wants. Okay? So within 50 years, the whole nation rises and collapses. So at that point, in 138, they thought, khalas, Islam is over in Andalus. And then Allah Azza wa Jal get in. Allah Azza wa Jal has his own plan. According to people measures. But Allah Azza wa Jal will say his word. Says, they have plan and Allah has plan. They have plan, Allah has plan. Yani, using it symbolically, a miracle is needed to bring this whole thing back together. And Allah Azza wa Jal will send you. Okay? And that's what we will start a new era next time, inshallah. And that is Imara al-Umawiyyah.